Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Probably Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And as it's Monday, Edwin is with me once again for his perspective on what's going on in property land. Hello.
G'day, Martin. It's our property rant for Monday for the week. It's been an absolute packed week, packed weekend, and we've got a packed show for our viewers tonight. Obviously, look, I'm sporting the what would you call the business hairstyle tonight. So for next week, I'm thinking of going Bee Gees, but for now, we'll just go with the business look.
Oh, very good. Yeah, very smooth, very smooth. Okay. Well, it still amazes me that there are more comments about your hair than anything else. It's very, very
funny.
Yeah,
my hair in the doomsday clock behind us. I mean, when that thing hits 12 midnight, that's it. The property market is well and truly dead.
All right. And so people should understand that this clock tonight is at 25 minutes to midnight, right? So we're close to, but we haven't quite hit doomsday yet.
No, not yet. And but look, we've got it. We'll have an interesting show anyway to discuss things. There's a number of things that have been happening. Obviously, I hear that Queensland's going to start up a travel bubble with Hollywood, Bollywood, and Hong Kongwood. They're already boarding Tom Hanks. So that's going to be interesting how all that pans out. So I think they're reaching out to Hollywood. Keep the Victorians and the New South Welshmen out of Queensland, but open up the travel bubble with Hollywood, Bollywood, and Hong Kongwood.
Well, my theory, Edwin, is that Western Australia and Queensland would like to get a very large hacksaw, right, and just cut down around the boundaries and just move themselves off into separate islands.
Well, I thought I actually heard on the rumour mill that the premiers were going to contract manual labour from Mexico to build the border, to build a wall across the borders. That's what I'm hearing. I don't know. Like, that's what my Mexican relatives are telling me. They're preparing their visas to come over and set up a border. And then you've got these bloody Victorians, shooting up the property searchable index, because as soon as they get out of lockdown, they're going to start buying property in Sydney, they tell me.
Right, so rabbit-proof fence 2.0 coming our way.
That's it, rabbit-proof fence. It's all happening. And then there are people running away from auctions, Martin. That's what we're going to be talking about specifically today. After they're the winning bidders, they're running away, and properties find themselves back on the market.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's start with the first thing, which is all of this spruiking about working from home and how this is going to fundamentally transform the property market and lift values out of town and all those good things.
Well, it's a sober conversation to have, I think, and it's the buzz. It's the buzz. Narrative now, working from home. It's making it easier. But look, I just want to say to our viewers, and that is, if you're going to buy property because you're going to be working from home, buy within your means. I'm not saying that's not going to happen. I mentioned even before the pandemic really kicked off early this year, we spoke about how there was going to be a migration, a shift of population. I mean, you and I got called idiots back then, I recall, or something to the like. But we were discussing about the migration of people and people moving away from high-rise buildings to lower set, medium density, as opposed to living in in these dog boxes that they've been building around the CBDs of Sydney and the main hubs. So that is there. But I still warn the people, buy within your means, because if you can work from home, if your job can be done from home, think about the fact that it can be done remotely from another country, that it's obviously going to charge the company a lot less. And if you think that you've got issues with regards to security or communication with people that English is not the first language or whatever the case may be, well, then you've also got local people that would certainly be prepared to do that job, especially people that have already been made redundant. They've already lost their jobs, so they'll be happy to work from home for two-thirds of the pay packet that a lot of these people that are working from home are getting.
Right, and that's the point, Edwin, isn't it? That virtualization can be done internationally as well as just locally, right? And so there's a bit of a slidey slope here in terms of what may happen. I mean, I am seeing, certainly in my surveys, some people saying, I'm now looking, you know, in regional areas further away from the main urban centres, simply because I can now work at home much more than I could previously, and therefore travel into town is less of an issue, right? So that is definitely having an impact. But what's also happening is that it's also having an impact in terms of who's buying what and where. And I am seeing some changes in and around those areas a bit further out where there is perhaps a bit more demand. But I think you're right. People need to be really cautious and careful. And, you know, the bottom line is this. It's okay to buy if you are confident about your income flows and you're confident you can service the mortgage. But if you're going to actually buy when, in fact, your job is at risk, remember, unemployment's likely to be 10% by the end of the year and 7% 2 years down the track, it's more of a risky proposition. And we are seeing now more and more corporate jobs going. Suncorp announced today that they're laying some people off. We're seeing it, you know, what I call structural unemployment happening. And it's middle management. You know, it's not just, you know, frontline workers now. It's the middle management layers that are being compressed. And that, I think, is going to have a really significant impact on a lot of people. And say people should be really, really cautious about, you know, making commitments unless they're absolutely sure, I guess.
Well, that's correct. And look, and you and I have also discussed many a times the fact that the governments, local, state and federal governments have failed with their infrastructure altogether. Yeah. And if people are going to be looking at regional areas, they've also got to consider, these young families have got to consider schools. They've got to consider daycare. They've got to consider primaries and secondary schools and even tertiary for that matter. Now is the time for all governments to pull. I was going to say something else, but I'll refrain. Pull themselves together and get on about introducing some serious infrastructure as opposed to the failed projections or the failed proposals and the failed rhetoric and everything else that's around residential construction that just takes shifts one issue from one side to the other side as opposed to real serious infrastructure. So, and that infrastructure, even if they started building it this year, Martin, it's going to take years for it to evolve. Now, some families, maybe young families, young couples with little ones that don't really mind the primary schools, but secondary schools, are a major concern to a lot of families, as well as I said, tertiary education. So, it's going to be the sands are shifting. But at the end of the day, I think property is still going. It's still on a slippery slope. No matter where you look at it, there'll be certain pockets that will go up and others will go down. Certain type of property will go up, others will go down. But it's just a wait and see. Just follow the trends. Follow the numbers. The facts.
Well, I was going to say follow the money. That probably is a good advice too. But look, talking of the money, there was a very interesting post that was on Twitter, right, relating to the REA growth postcode, right? And, you know, Contraff, for example, is in Sydney, right? Growth rate over the last year of 27.6%, or Bondi, 23.9%, or Willoughby, 23.7%, right? They were the ones at the top of the list, followed by Caulfield North in Melbourne at 22.7%. I mean, where are they getting those numbers from? Because I don't see anything like that in any of the data that I've got.
Well, look, I tell you what I've been doing. I've been following quite a number of properties around Sydney. Clontarf and Bondi haven't been obviously on my scope because I've got no real reason at the moment to look for property over there. I'm doing enough as it is on a lot of other areas. But if I did enough, if I focus a little bit on that, I'm sure I'll find the same reasoning. And that and that's this, Martin, is I find that a lot of these surveys, a lot of this research, a lot of this information, they're all really hanging their hat on CoreLogic and the historical data. Now, I've got many examples where I've noted that if the property isn't listed or hasn't been listed for a number of years, whether it be 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, guess what? The predictive value of the daily hedonic index is very, very low. It is very low because they haven't updated. The system doesn't update as regularly. So what you've got is you've got what appears to be growth in values because the hedonic goes from, let's say, in one case, particular over in Quakers Hill, just when the property was listed, Alfred Street at Quakers Hill, it was listed, the hedonic daily index was showing as the value being 905,000. Within 2 weeks, Martin, of that listing coming online and the agent giving a guide of 980 to 1,020,000, the hedonic all of a sudden, I kid you not, within 2 weeks, it went to a predictive value of 980. And I've seen others similar in that particular region, as well as in Chatswood, Willoughby, and these areas. So it, basically, they've got people that are just not keeping up, and then you've got the opposite. Of course, you've got where the predictive values are in the 2.2, 2.5 million, and yet the agents are guiding the properties at 1.8, and they're not underquoting. That's where they believe the market is because of comparable sales, even on the same street. So a lot of this isn't up to date. Willoughby, I've done a lot of work around Willoughby of late, and I can tell you now that a lot of the property there is going below the guides. Yeah, there was one sale that I attended with my client on Patrick Street, but what happened there was obviously it was a knockdown to build a new house because across the road, one similar property was bought and a brand new house was built with six bedrooms, five bathrooms, and a three-car garage. It's not your typical run-of-the-mill property. Let's pretend it's short-term accommodation type of property that had been built. Regardless, it got sold for 5.8 million on a dubious, with some dubious background to it. And that's what they're hanging the hat on. So you've got this sales that CoreLogic are just not keeping up with the real data, live data. And I tend to think a lot of the data that's being shared online by our followers, yours and my followers on Twitter, because a lot of them are attending auctions like I do for their own reasons, and they share it. And this data is real, what's happening. And yet CoreLogic takes ages to pick it up and the mainstream take ages to pick it up and report it because it's not in the best interest.
Yeah, so the one that I referred to, the original tweet, we've put that up on screen, was from realestate.com.au, right? So I actually ran some numbers on a couple of the different postcodes and I got a very different answer. I mean, one of the most interesting one was Crafters West, right? So they're claiming a 35.5% increase in 12 months. Right, just think about that.
Well, shut up and take my money is what I would say.
Yeah, except I don't believe it. So it seems to me that this is yet more spooking, right? It's yet more, telling maybe half the story. And by the way, this was in a publication, mansionaustralia.com.au, right? So that tells you something about the
location. Exactly. A lot of the guides are just, or the offers are on the auction, and because they're not being reported, sales figures aren't being reported, properties that are passed in aren't being reported as to what they got passed in at. Again, it's just a matter of going to these auctions and seeing what's really happening for people to get a good idea, or if you particularly if you want to buy in the area in those particular areas, sale prices are coming in well and truly below guides, which which generally are underquoted as a, by many agents in order to attract a greater audience and create that sense of emotion and fear of missing out by having quite a number of bidders there. And talking about bidders, you know, I've got a bone to pick with one of your followers. They've been stalking me. They've been coming to auctions that I've been bidding on for a particular client. What's going on? Yeah. Stop it.
You're getting famous, Edwin. You're getting famous, right? Because you actually were down there on the ground, right? And actually, involved in a couple of auctions, which I saw through the tweets.
Yes, I try to comment on some of the ones that we're not participating on mainly, so that because obviously the ones that we are participating on, I've got to be careful not to miss the call. Yeah, I'm too busy on the screen on Twitter and all sorts of things could happen. Before you know it, it's ran away. If you are going to buy at auction, my call is I've got to be in a bit of a banter with or the auctioneer, you know, try to get a game of a bit of a banter with me again, as I like to do, because I kicked off the auction. I think it was $500,000 below what they were guiding, and $700,000 below what they were really wanting, and he said, "Oh yeah," he said something, the words along the line of, "You know, don't think that by slowing down that you're going to get it any cheaper." Well, I feel like saying, I feel like saying a number of things, but look, the proof's in the pudding. It did slow down. People start thinking as to why they should really get, why they shouldn't really get emotional about buying at these auctions, and if they haven't done the pest and building reports or researched their own, or got their own guys to do the pest and building reports, they don't really know what's wrong with the property. And long gone are the days where people can just dump up, $2.5-3 million for crap property on busy roads.
Yeah, that's right. And what's interesting about this whole auction thing, right, is that it can run away and, emotion can get the better of people, unfortunately, right? And unfortunately, people buy with their hearts rather than their heads quite often, right? And then regret at their leisure. And of course, the agents actually rely on that in terms of trying to get the price higher. But at the moment, even with all of that trickery, the auction clearance rates are still very low, and actually the momentum in the market is pretty weak, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And this is what a lot of people don't get in the mainstream, just keep on pushing that narrative that things are going crazy. And Doc Wilson's really going, he's on fire with his narrative of, we're returning to pre-COVID days. And I'm sure our mate Joy is about to produce some article saying that, there's been a turnaround in the hedonic and prices are skyrocketing.
Last weekend. AFR, and he was quoting CBA, who's changed their view from a 32% fall to a 5% fall, and Joy is still holding to his 20% rise over the next 12 months.
Yeah, so I remember that, I made a meme of DFA, myself, and if Chris Joy calls CBA a bear or bearish on the property outlook, they're teddy bears compared to you, myself, and Lindsay David.
That's not a bear. This is a bear, right?
Exactly. Maybe you should put that meme up that I.
But what's interesting is Shane Oliver came out today, right, with another review, and he's still holding for 20% falls in Melbourne, and not quite so much falls, but still falls in seeds. So he's still holding the line in terms of down rather than up, and it's quite interesting just watching all the swings going on from the various commentators, all trying to sort of make the point about, well, everything's not quite as bad, and property's always going to hold some value. It's really quite weak what's going on there. The truth is that nothing has fundamentally changed. The unemployment rate's still going up. The JobKeeper and JobSeeker is going to come to an end quite soon. We've got a third of SMEs looking as though they're going to disappear quite soon. We've still got Victoria locked down, and we've still got the borders closed. hard to see why you would argue for price rises other than this fundamental flawed argument to say, well, interest rates have come down, therefore you can actually borrow more because the repayments are lower, except the banks are now tightening their lending standards. So effectively, the amount of money you can get relative to where you got it a few months ago is actually a bit lower in many postcodes. And in fact, there was an article today that said that in a number of postcodes, ANZ, for example, is now reducing the LVRs up to which they will lend because of the high risks in those postcodes. So I think people need to actually offset the low interest rates with the lending cautious approach that many of the lenders are now taking because they're concerned about future falls.
Yeah, look, definitely, and again, it goes back to our auction discussion. People have got to be careful as to, you know, getting overexcited and paying what I call over the odds at auctions because they get emotionally caught up. If you know, unless you've got an extra 5 or 10% stashed underneath your mattress. Then to be prepared to pull that out if the valuation's coming low, you know, be warned, be careful. It's make sure you've got those checks and balances in place because, you'll do your 10%. You'll do your 10% deposits, and very rarely now are contracts accepting a 5% deposit at auctions. They want the full 10%, and so be it. It protects the vendor to an extent. That doesn't protect the buyer. So be sober at all, always with what you're going to offer under that, because post your emotional purchase, or what could be an emotional purchase, comes the real hard cold truth, and that's the valuation. And depends what side of the bed the value got up on will determine what's on that, if it's valued at contract price or below.
Right. And my contacts are telling me that valuers are being more and more cautious, particularly on the high-rise sector, but also some houses in some places too, because they're not sure exactly what the real price point is now, with price discoveries sort of very much not working very well because of such low volumes. They're taking a more cautious approach too.
Definitely, and they've got to. As I said, these are professionals that get paid very little, and I'm not saying that they deserve very little. They're highly qualified professionals. They should be paid a lot more. I recall when they used to get paid by the banks, in the tune of $550 per valuation. Our viewers would be surprised to know that the banks are only paying the majority of them contract price of approximately $160 per valuation, and to hang your professional indemnity insurance on a $160 invoice, I don't think so. They're going to be cautious. It's happened in previous downturns. It happened, I've seen this happen over and over again, where a lot of buyers will get, will come short, and they have to stump up. If you don't want to lose your deposit, your 10% deposit, well, you have to be prepared to stump up the balance between what the valuer says it's worth, what you paid, because it's based, the loan is going to be based on what the valuer says it's worth, not what you paid.
Right. And I'll tell you something else, Edwin, that when the property market was going up relatively quickly, the banks would quite often not even use a valuer. What they would do is to send a bank employee out just to make sure the property was there, right? Because they were relatively comfortable that, in a rising market, we can't lose. I can tell you now that banks are not doing that anymore. They are actually now using valuers. And what they're trying to do is to get the risk transferred from the bank to the valuer if the valuer comes in with a price that's too exalted relative to the real truth.
Yeah, it's as I keep on saying, it's 204, 205 all over again. For me, it's deja vu. I've been here before. It's not the first. It won't be the last. The values are going to be a lot more cautious. I'm not saying that they haven't been, but obviously there's a lot more riding on this, and insurers are putting a lot of pressure on professional indemnity insurances for all professionals.
Yep.
And values just seem to be caught there in the meat in the sandwich. So it's it's something that our viewers, I know that they take our warnings to heart, and they'll approach things soberly.
Yeah, and 2 points to make there. Firstly, the typical valuer for units is tending to come in around 10 to 15% below where you might expect, right? So that's already locked in, right? The second is, of course, that if you actually buy a property with 10% deposit, right, and then you basically get 90% by way of the mortgage, remember, of course, that if the property price drops by 10%, you're wiped out, right? It's not shared. That loss is not shared between the bank and the borrower, right? Effectively, the borrower, the vendor, takes all of the risk for the downside. And again, I have to keep reminding people about this because it almost like they forget that that's the case. You get wiped out first.
Yeah, and a lot of the people that bought with 5% last year with 5% deposits, yeah, they're well and truly underwater, and it's only a matter of time before banks have to adjust the balance sheets and have to go back to the regulations that they should be abiding by. But look, it is a pandemic. It is an environment that we still got to walk through for many months to come, and who knows for how long this is going to stretch out for. But banks aren't going to be waiting too much longer before people are made to pay. And also, they haven't given anything for free. They've just tacked it on at the end. And they will be balancing, they will be adjusting their balance sheets, and the adjustments on their balance sheets, as some have alluded to, could potentially be interest rate rises, in the near future. So that's why I keep on saying, be very, very sober as to what you buy, where you buy, and when you buy.
Right. And talking about being sober, let's talk about boarding houses.
Yeah, boarding houses. What's been interesting of late is on the ground is that a lot of the properties that a number of my associates and I've been inspecting have, some properties have two kitchens. We've even come across properties with three kitchens. So obviously these are illegal boarding houses that are now being put on the market because the short-term rentals aren't there. The students that have come in and they've got also got a working visa, they're not around, so they're not getting any rental incomes, and it doesn't surprise me at times when you see a five bedroom house or something that's advertised as a five bedroom and not including a granny flat, depending on how the ad runs, it doesn't surprise me to see two kitchens there or. What I have been surprised a couple of times now is going into places and seeing three kitchens. And obviously that's a lot of these boarding houses are going to start coming on market because one of my associates deals with clients that have got a number of these properties around Sydney, Sydney West, Inner West, North Shore. You name it, they're around. And in one particular case, she was telling me that one of her client's properties, got burnt. Part of the household got burnt. Now he can't claim on insurance. Can't claim on. He's basically has to wear a $200,000 repair bill. Why? Because they've got illegal kitchens. Illegal cooking facilities. It's run as a boarding house. No council approvals, so no insurer is going to cover it. And quite frankly, I'm surprised that even the council's allowed them to stay, or neighbours haven't complained. But they've been very careful as to where they buy, and what type of neighbours the neighbourhood are, because it's generally in the same demographics, the same background. They a lot of them don't particularly care. And look, let's face it, for a lot of these students, a lot of these overseas short-term stays have, it works for them. And often the case, the other properties haven't. But it's a bit of a mess there. But look, I'm I'm confident again that there's going to be more and more properties coming on the market of similar ilk because of what I'm seeing off market properties that from associates and clients and ones that are already on the market as it is. So it's the majority of them are from Asian backgrounds, but that's a given, and because that's how they got bought and that's how they made a fair bit of money.
Right, but the point is they're probably illegal, and therefore you need to do extra due diligence if you were ever looking at those types of property, right? So another, again, a bit of a warning, be cautious and be careful. Don't just assume, you know, the three might tell you something, right? And it might not be what you think it is, right? And, of course, we always say, I don't know whether you say this to your clients, but I always say to people, look, if you are actually thinking of buying a property, it is worth making sure that all the checks are done, right? I mean, I was talking to somebody the other week who basically bought a property but didn't realize that there was actually a planning change across the wall, across the road, which allowed them to put a factory up, right? And that hadn't been picked up. So effectively, they were buying what they thought was in the residential area, but over the road, it wasn't residential. And they actually nearly fell over. Luckily, they didn't complete, but they found out in time. But it was by happenstance rather than by process.
Yeah, many people have got caught out. Many agents have sold properties with uninterrupted views, knowing that there's a block of units going to be built, that's going to impede the so-called uninterrupted views. And that goes back to the research, goes back to checking to see what's happening in the local councils and the town planning and so forth. So it's buyer beware. And you really have to, especially in this day, more so now than ever.
Yeah. Yeah, take everything with a pinch of salt. Don't believe anything that anybody tells you. Check it and validate it. And by the way, you know, if you're in New South Wales, you can still go to the registry there and see recent transactions. It's a bit out of date, but I still think that's one of the best sources of good information relative to what may be available on the portals, which is often a bit myopic.
Yeah, look, some agents do disclose some information. It's a matter of making the call. Make the call it's a big investment. And knowing that if you have to buy, if you're in the market to buy, and you for one reason or another you want to buy now, more of a reason to be more cautious. Get as much information as possible. There are obviously websites that we subscribe to on a yearly basis. There's other information. There are things that we've developed over the years to help us better understand and assist our clients. But there's a lot of free stuff out there as well. Ring if you, some agents have offsiders. One of my tricks is to not necessarily call the listing agent, but call the assistant. they're more inclined to give you more information because they've got to build a name for themselves as well.
Okay, hot tip there. Don't talk to the engine driver, talk to the oily rag, right?
Something like that. Don't talk to the bus driver, talk to the conductor.
Yeah, very good, yeah. So, Edwin, one of the things you mentioned earlier on was people running away from auctions. And that sounds very intriguing. What happened?
Okay, so this is our take on the AFR's take on how it sold. Our take is, will it sell? So in our will it sell segment, we've got a property in Chatswood. It was auctioned 6 weeks ago, and the winning bid was $1.4 million. Lo and behold, last week, it came back up on the market. I thought I'd made a mistake. I thought I'd clicked the wrong link on my search on real estate, and then I thought, hold on a minute, this is live. This is on now. So it's been put on the market. So after some phone calls and attending another open inspection that the agents from the area had, just talking to one of the young guys there, we actually found out, they disclosed to myself and a couple of my colleagues, they disclosed that the purchaser of that property actually ran away. And I said, what do you mean ran away? And they said, yeah, we can't, ran away, didn't come into the office to pay the deposit. I said, but you've got the details. You've got to take details in order to attend the auction and to participate in the auction. They can't find him. He's disappeared. Some of my Twitter followers tend to think he's gone to Queensland. Others seem to think he's stuck in Melbourne with a lockdown there. It's a bizarre one. It's a bizarre, and the interesting thing is going to be is it's back up for auction. It's another auction campaign, and it's going to be interesting to see what it achieves this time around. Last time we got sold that auction with a price of 1.4. So it's a wait and see.
I wonder whether they'll turn up again and bid for it again.
Well, look, there are a number of things. There are a number of, obviously, it's strange. It's without saying too much, putting too much out there. I have seen in other in other auctions with other agencies. I have seen what my colleagues and I we call the professional bidders, and I look. Our followers, our viewers can understand what I'm trying to get at, and we have seen them, and they attend various auctions, which is effectively it's illegal. But look, that's what I've got. That's what we've got. That's what we know as facts. Everything else is alleged as to what may have happened, but the big question is how many more are going to have buyer's remorse post the auction and potentially not go back in, and what does the I know what the regulations and the law says and what people can do, but if they haven't given the right details and at the end of the day you're just citing a driver's license, and what's a driver's license? Do you sue? And there's just too many things that could go wrong to decide, it's just as good to quickly put it back on market and then the vendors, bite their nails, because it's obviously they may not achieve what they got last time around, especially in this market.
Deja vu all over again. Edwin, I appreciate your time tonight. I notice that the clock has gone well past 12 now. So we missed the property meltdown this day. But, it'll go around every couple of, every 24 hours. So I guess it's going to be right at some point.
Yeah, well, look, CoreLogic, REA, and the searchable index are staking up the fire, to keep the property market hot, and who knows when there'll be a mother of all freezers.
Right. Edwin, thanks for your time. Take care. We'll catch up again same time next week for another insight from the property market frontline. See you later.
Thanks, Martin. All the best.
Cheers.